Harbor News Press radio station.
Good afternoon and welcome to another edition of Money Talk. I'm Neil Kreisel, and Diane Duver and I are your hosts every week right here on AM 1290, repeated at 11 and on Saturdays at 6. We're brought to you by Cornerstone Home Lending, whose highly trained and experienced team takes great pride in helping people with home financing, offering competitive rates and a wide array of loan programs. American Riviera Bank, smart banking for smart people in Santa Barbara, at Figueroa and Anacapa Streets, and in Montecito's Upper Village. And Arlington Financial Advisors, a leading wealth management firm in Santa Barbara, providing its clients with the personal care and attention of a small independent firm coupled with the vast resources of a major financial institution.
So, Neil, how are you doing today?
Well, I just saw some bad news on the web that Bill Gates and Melinda are getting divorced.
I know. I just saw that myself. It came through as an alert.
Yeah, I'm really sorry I didn't become a divorce lawyer. That would be a great big time. Do you believe Bezos is getting got a divorce now? Gates is getting a divorce. I thought money solved all problems. Is that not true?
Evidently not. But it's a quick way to get half of what you used to have.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So we have with us, to transition into something relevant, Jeff Hirsch, who's the founder and president of the Right Brain Studio and JBH Personal Branding, as well as an adjunct professor in the Graduate Communications Program at USC with us today. Jeff, thank you so much for being here with us. We really appreciate you.
It's a pleasure. Thanks, Neil. And thanks, Diane.
So our first article today was in Sunday's Wall Street Journal. And it is about the change in the stepped up basis tax rule that permits essentially the deferral of capital gains taxes for inheritance purposes by providing the beneficiary to value the asset at the current value and therefore not pay taxes until either the property or the asset is sold or the estate comes to an end. And it's a huge benefit to beneficiaries, obviously, particularly when given the fact that the tax rate is based on the Biden plan is to rise up to 39.6%. The other problem besides the taxes is it's going to create a lot of problems in terms of if you can't take a stepped up basis, which simply means the trustee has to create or buy a appraisal to see what the market value of the asset is today, you have to go back and determine what the asset value was 5, 10, 15, 20, even 50 years ago, which is in itself quite a difficult issue. So this is looming. Whether it gets passed or not is another issue, but it certainly would be a major change.
From my experience, it's going to be a major change and it's going to create a lot of havoc when people are already at a heightened sense of grieving and then to not know what the asset is. There are many people out there that bought these stocks, bonds, a long time ago with no real paper trail of what they're worth. And if you don't have proof of what it's worth, the IRS deems that your cost basis or what you bought it at is zero. And so I just see this as being a real accounting nightmare and a real burden for the heirs of, the deceased.
And this is a time because of the stock market rise in the last 2 years that pretty much everyone has capital gains. It's not just people who own a large farm or business. It's just about everybody.
And usually you have, the heirs of the wealthy individuals, if you will, have less than what the grandparent or parent has or whomever is leaving this gift to you. And oftentimes the heirs aren't in the same financial situation. And to have that extra burden of the taxes being due from the date of acquisition, I think will heavily affect many. in a negative way.
Yeah, and they'll have to sell the assets probably to some extent to pay the taxes. The next article is from...
Well, you know, Neil, on that point, I believe what it will be the same is they won't have to pay the tax until the asset is sold. So it's going to force these people who don't have very much to really think hard about whether or not to sell. Let's say they owned Apple and they bought it in 1995, their parents, and then their parents pass away. It's really going to say, well, I can't really afford the taxes. So is it really an asset?
The next article is from Jason Swag, the intelligent investor, also in the Wall Street Journal. And the title of the article is Think Twice Before Cuddling This Bear. And the article is focused on the fact that this market has had very short periods of decline over the last several years. The general view based upon a survey that Vanguard has recently taken is that only 4% of people believe that the stock market is going to sustain a serious long-term decline. The general view is, and that's a really small number, general view is the public believes that the market, based on their, I guess, conditioning over the last few years, only can go up. And if it goes down, it will go down for a very short period of time. Here's an interesting quote. Investors elsewhere seem to have concluded that the swiftness of the recovery, that stocks aren't risky at all. After last spring's rebound, David Portnoy, a social media celebrity, declared stocks only go up. And the end of the article has a reverse quote, a different quote from one of our former guests, Rob Arnott, who is the father of beta investing. And he said that sure, stocks only go up until they go down. And so, you've got people who are, reacting to a short-term phenomenon of essentially very short dips and very long rising markets, and that could cause some problems when the market, which it will, goes into a real bear market.
And then at that point, we're going to hear how, the millennials have always had it so tough and what have you. But part of it is not understanding what markets do, and whether that be the real estate market, whether that be the stock market, it is all a period of ebb and flows. And, really where you shake out where the investors are versus the speculators are when the market starts going down.
Aren't you a millennial? How do you pronounce it?
Neil, I love that you think that. I continue to tell everybody that I'm a millennial, but no, in fact, I'm a Generation X.
Oh, I'm a millennial. How do you pronounce it?
You're a boomer. Millennial.
Oh, a boomer is different. Boomer is different, right?
Yes.
Okay. Next article is entitled Tesla Makes More with Bitcoin Than Selling Cars. And I think this is quite an astounding statistic. In the latest release of their earnings, the company sold some 1.5 billion in Bitcoin, where they posted $101 million profit to the bottom line. At the same time, they were selling regulatory credits to other automakers to help them meet emission standards, which has 100% profit margin, and that reached $518 million. So these two non-car or automobile sales made up 100% of Tesla's $533 million pre-tax profit. They made nothing from their basic business, which I think is pretty scary.
It is, and that's really where we're seeing, where we think the bubble is in those speculative companies that aren't actually making money in their core businesses. So the Teslas of the world, the SPACs out there. But on the Tesla front, Elon Musk is going to host Saturday Night Live this week, which is kind of interesting.
Yeah, I would have loved to have been the host of Saturday Night Live, but I never rose to the level of apparent success as Musk. Anyway,
I can only imagine what that would have been like, Neil.
Yeah. So this article in the Wall Street Journal is called Time to Prune Your Portfolio. In a market this hot, the fear of missing out is powerful. There is cited a article in Nature magazine that found that people, when they have a problem with any type of asset, the default decision is to buy something. There is an incredibly higher percent of people who will, when they are faced with an issue, will buy something. And they did a study with Legos where there was a problem with a building a bridge. And rather than, you know, level out an unequal wall, 90% of the people took extra Legos and tried to build up the other end of the wall, even though it eventually fell down. And the article is essentially saying that people should spend as much time thinking about what to buy as thinking about what to sell. You're listening to Money Talk on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back.
For prospective homebuyers, one of the most important steps of the loan process is getting clear and honest information from someone who will speak plainly and truthfully about loan programs and options.
I'm Kelly Marsh, Vice President, California, of Cornerstone Home Lending, where our highly skilled and experienced team takes great pride in helping clients obtain home financing with honest, knowledgeable, fast, friendly, and efficient service. As a Santa Barbara native who has spent the past 20 years in the mortgage industry and has closed over 4,000 loans, I'd appreciate the opportunity to earn your business and invite you to visit the KellyMarshTeam.com or call my office at 805-563-1100 to learn more about how Cornerstone Home Lending can help you determine the best way to manage mortgage debt to achieve a more stable financial future.
Licensed by the Department of Business Oversight under the California Residential Mortgage Lending Act. California Residential Mortgage Lending Act license number 41DB072220. California Financial Lending Law license number 60DB072528. Loan originator NMLS number 245822. Not a commitment to loan. Equal housing opportunity.
It's a fact. Successful wealth management is built on strategies that focus on the big picture, take a long-term view, and establish deep and valued relationships. Hello, I'm Diane Duva, founding partner at Arlington Financial Advisors, Santa Barbara's trusted family guide, empowering you to make more informed and confident decisions. At Arlington Financial Advisors, we bring order and balance to your financial life by monitoring and managing risk so you can focus on your work, family, and enjoying the moment. We are a fully independent firm offering strategic financial planning, estate and tax planning, and private money management. Our plans and portfolios are handcrafted using a rigorous and disciplined approach, supported by a consistent yet highly personalized client experience. Our clients look to Arlington Financial Advisors as a home away from home, a comfortable place to protect what they've accomplished while they prepare for what comes next. Please visit arlingtonfinancialadvisors.com or call me, Diane Duva, at 805-699-7300.
Welcome back to Money Talk, brought to you by Cornerstone Home Lending since 1988, a mortgage banker and direct lender that believes in providing in-depth loan consulting to its customers in a personalized and honest manner.
And we can be at moneytalk1290@gmail.com, or you could give us a call at 805-564-1290. And if you're just joining us, we have the pleasure of having Jeff Hirsch, founder and president of the Right Brain Studio and JBH Personal Branding. Thanks so much for being here with us, Jeff.
Thanks again. Pleasure to be here.
So tell us, how did you get involved with branding and, you know, the whole concept of what people want to put forward or what they should be putting forward?
Well, it kind of goes back to my childhood when I just loved the TV commercials, and I used to read the backs of the cereal boxes. You know, I just love brands. I love going to the supermarket. I love the commercials. And it was kind of an early indoctrination and really into the popular culture. I also, you know, I'm still a huge consumer of all kinds of media, but I love television. I love the movies. And when I was getting out of college, I was actually a film major in college, very, very useful. I focused more on film history and criticism, so there were really no jobs for somebody like me coming out of school. And I kind of didn't know what to do. And I thought, well, I'm a pretty good writer. I was in Chicago. I was at Northwestern University, and I Well, maybe I'll take a walk over to the Medill School, the journalism school. Maybe I'll get a master's in journalism and kind of buy a year or two before I have to go out and get a real job. And I discovered they had an advertising program, and I was really intrigued by this. And it just seemed to marry, you know, all these different worlds. You know, I love the pop culture. I loved, you know, advertising and marketing without really knowing anything or much about it. So it seemed like it's really kind of fun, creative, and relevant pursuit, something I'd really enjoy. And I went through that program and got out and got into the ad agency business. And that's how I started out in New York City at 23 years old. I was an account executive on the Brown-Forman account. Brown-Forman makes Old Forester Bourbon and Jack Daniels and all kinds of big brands like that. And I worked on electric shavers, Remington shavers way back then. And it was great. It was fun. And it was kind of everything I wanted it to be. So I did that, you know, for a while. I went to the client side. My client Brown-Forman hired me. I went back into the ad agency business, and somewhere in the mid to late 80s, I started the Right Brain Studio. I started my own thing. I wanted to be out on my own, and I wanted to do branding and strategy kind of a little differently than others were doing it at the time. So, you know, I've started a childhood. It's kind of been a lifelong love of mine. It's all I've ever really done.
And so do you think that branding and advertising go hand in hand? And what are the differences?
Yeah, well, yeah, sure, they go hand in hand. There's something in marketing, you know, you might have learned this in school if you ever took a marketing or a business course, something that we call the marketing mix, which is really everything involved in marketing. It's usually simplified as the four P's, which are, I hope I remember them all, place, so where you buy the product, promotion, which encompasses advertising, products, which is, you know, what it is, and price, you know, how much I'm going to charge. And those categories break down into subcategories. But the entire category is marketing. Advertising are the specific brand communications that you put out there to attract people to your brand. You might do it to raise awareness. You might do it to, you know, change your brand image or you know, directly get people to buy something. But those are very specific communications for very specific purposes. Branding is a much more kind of long-term unified kind of vision for what your brand is. It really doesn't change. Branding doesn't change that much, or it shouldn't change that much over time. Brands do change and adapt. I can give you some examples, but essentially, you know, branding is, very simply put, you know, why should I buy your product? You know, what's this about? And of course, there are, you know, practical reasons why you want to buy a product. You know, I buy this phone because it works really well. But much more important than that, and the reason that I love it so much, the reason why it's so fascinating, is the emotional side of it. If you think about the products that you use, the brands, products and services you use, you can kind of talk about them in that rational way. You might start explaining it that way, but really, I think when it comes down to it, it's what's your relationship in this brand? What is this brand? How does this brand allow me to feel about myself? You know, why did I choose this brand?
The question Diane just asked was, you know, what's the difference between advertising and branding? But right. let me throw a third part of that question, and that is social media and how social media is in many instances is replacing advertising as the most effective tool.
Well, it's all part of the marketing mix, right? And social media would fall into that promotional bucket that I, you know, out of the four P's that I mentioned just a minute ago. And yeah, absolutely, Richard. The way we talk to people now is just night and day versus kind of, you know, when I was growing up, probably when all of you were growing up as well. You know, we had three networks and a couple of local newspapers and some radio stations, billboards. That was it, really. And the choices have just proliferated, and you know, social is a huge, huge part of that. And it's interesting how social dominates so many marketing plans now, where it used to be that you bought a network television spot. If you were a national brand, you buy a network TV spot. Everybody kind of sees the same message. Those messages didn't change all that much often. You can't really customize them because, you know, it's network TV. And, you know, social media changed everything. So we've gone from this mass form of communication to a much more personal kind of communication. You know, it's always evolving. And it's interesting for, you know, for somebody like me, you know, my kids and I view this very differently, because they're social, they're digital natives, as they say. They grew up with all this stuff. And, you know, for somebody like me, it was a real shock to the system to kind of really almost start from scratch and learn marketing all over again.
But you also have data now that you didn't have before. And I guess from it requires a different skill set almost. You know, how do you analyze metadata, and how do you give feedback to your clients? Your clients now probably want feedback as to how successful the ad was, not just in terms of sales, but are we getting to the right people? So it's gotten, I guess, much more complicated.
It's gotten way, way complicated. And, you know, there are kind of two sides to marketing. There's the qualitative side and there's the quantitative side. You're talking about data, big data. That's the quant side. I have always been unabashedly a qual person. I'm a touchy-feely kind of person. I love to get into the psychology of you know, consumer behavior and human dynamics. And I love that stuff. Can that be quantified? Sure it can. But you know, I'm much more into kind of the quality of the data and getting into the nuances, the things that I feel really make one brand different from the other. So look, big data is great. I think one problem is that there's too much of it, and people don't really know how to analyze the data they have sometimes. And you know, it's always going to get down to people making choices and people making decisions. And this is, you know, the same inside a huge company that heavily relies on all this social media data and digital data that you're talking about. But, you know, you have to be very, very careful. And I've seen some of my clients, you know, big major packaged goods companies, they've told me within the past year or two that, you know, we have a lot of information, but we have very little insight, which is a really interesting thing to say. So they're, you know, they're just overwhelmed by it. So yes, that's changed everything completely. You know, not how I approach the business. I mean, I love it. I like to use it if I can get it, but that's not why people hire me. And it's not really one of my big interests, although, you know, it sure is something that's here to stay with us.
You're listening to Money Talk on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back.
When a bank is owned by the community and invests in the community, it answers to a different call. It's personal. It's driven by your needs, not ours. Welcome to American Riviera Bank, based right here in Santa Barbara, with branches in Montecito and Goleta. Our customers know us for personal service, every day, every way.
You can bank on us.
Bank on us.
Bank on us!
American Riviera Bank. Bank on better.
Hey everybody, Rachel Ray here. Nothing puts a bigger smile on my face than cooking up a big meal for family and friends. But there's not enough room at my table for the 17 million kids in America who are struggling with hunger. These children, that's one out of every five, often have to skip meals because there's just nothing to eat in the kitchen. Yet there's more than enough healthy, nutritious food produced right here in America to feed every last hungry child. If only there was a way to get it to them. That's why the Feeding America nationwide network of food banks collects surplus food to give hope to hungry kids and their families all across our country. But they can't do it without your help. Join me in supporting Feeding America at your local food bank and at feedingamerica.org. Together, we can solve hunger. Together, we're Feeding America.
A message from Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Welcome to The Jeremiah Show.
Broadcasting from the Evolve Advisor Studios in Los Angeles, Santa Barbara, or somewhere from the road.
This is a show that takes a peek behind the hospitality curtain with you. We explore the food, the drink, trends in the music, and the people and the vibe that make up this exciting world. I am your host, Jeremiah.
The Jeremiah Show airs Thursday at 11 a.m. and 9 p.m., Saturdays at noon, and Sunday mornings at 12 a.m. on AM 1290, the Santa Barbara News Press radio station.
Welcome back to Money Talk, brought to you by Arlington Financial Advisors, a leading wealth management firm founded on providing thoughtful, objective, and comprehensive financial guidance for families and entities who are seeking long-term financial confidence.
So, Jeff, you know, if before the break, we were talking about marketing in general and branding versus advertising and social media. You know, when you first left advertising, you started the Right Brain Studio. What then led you to also start the JBH personal branding business as well?
Okay, great. Two different things, two very different points of time. So let me take them one at a time, okay? Because it's worthwhile talking about why I started the Right Brain Studio. So my last job in organized labor, as I like to call it, was, you know, a long time ago. I was at Chiat Day, you know, very famous ad agency. I worked on the Apple account. I worked on a few others there as well. And I was a marketing guy, or as they call them at Chiat Day then and probably now, I was a suit, right? And Chiat Day, you know, very, very famous agency. And I was lucky enough to work with Jay Chiat and with Guy Day. Absolutely amazing experience, and there's a lot I learned from those guys and others there, but they really didn't treat the account people, the marketing people, with a heck of a lot of respect. It was all about the creative. It was all about the ads, and they always said they valued strategy, but I don't think they really did. I think it was all about making a big splash with an ad. That's what they were famous for. And one day I was having some kind of strategy discussion with one of the creative directors who, you know, we were disagreeing. You know, it's just a discussion. But at one point he got frustrated and said, "You know what? I'm creative and you're not. You think you have a vote here? You don't." And I said, "Okay, thank you." And I ended the meeting and I walked into my boss's office and I resigned that day. And I didn't really know what I was going to do, but I really, you know, I've always considered myself more a creative person than anything else. So I didn't really fill the role of suit all that well. I mean, I could do that work and I liked the strategic and even the quant part of the work. Given what I told you earlier, but I kind of liked it all and I was pretty good at it all. But what I really felt was missing from kind of the early stages of strategy development was that same level of creativity that was applied to the ads themselves. And I always thought that was a big mistake. I mean, a couple of things here. First, I worked in this industry that had a department called creative, which implied, and it was picked up by this creative director I was just mentioning, it implies that everybody else is not creative. So, you know, that's not right. I mean, we need to infuse creativity into the process at every step of the way, especially at the beginning. So if you could really formulate, you know, a great strategy, a great reason for being, the commercials actually aren't as important. They're still important, but not as important, because, you know, you're really solid in what you stand for. And that's the part of the business I always liked. I didn't just want to be a copywriter. I wanted to get deeper into more aspects of the business. So I started out really kind of repositioning qualitative research, which is focus groups and interviews and things like that. And the positioning and innovation work I did, you know, firmly as a creative person, that I'm different from others because this is how I approach things from the beginning. And that was, you know, unusual at the time. I think you see a lot more of it now. So that's why I started that business. What a great ride. I mean, I was really lucky, and I found clients relatively quickly, all word of mouth, you know, through people that I had worked with and worked for over the years. And, you know, before I knew it, I was doing work for Nestle and General Mills and Pepsi and Anheuser-Busch and big companies like that, which is wonderful. And that is one of the things I really love about what I do. What I love about the Right Brain Studio is that I don't just work on one thing all the time. I get to work on a whole range of things. And that cross-fertilization from one category to another is always really kind of, you know, fun and invigorating and sometimes surprising. So I like learning, you know, what I pick up in one place and applying it to another. So that was the Right Brain Studio, you know, still going strong, with the exception of this past year, which was a COVID year. And that brings me to the personal branding. So, you know, over the course of my career, I've encountered kind of three major bumps in the road. Right. The first was 9/11, and my business stopped for about a year. It's like nothing was happening. I do a lot of qualitative research. I do a lot of traveling and talking to people in person to, you know, ask them questions, to help formulate strategy, to inform, you know, other marketing activity. It just ended, and it was quite devastating. And, you know, recovered from that, and everything was going along very nicely. And then the Great Recession, and it was kind of the same thing. You know, it was almost a year, and, you know, there was some work, but, you know, they were really tough times. So this time, you know, I saw this coming. It was like, oh, I've seen this movie before, you know, and I know exactly what's going to happen in my business. It happens to everybody. Well, not everybody, but it happens to a good deal of people in marketing services. You know, the clients stop spending money. They don't have budgets. I mean, big companies, you know, they don't have the money to do what they used to do with you. So I started thinking about it, and it really happened quickly, this idea to start a personal branding business. And it really grew out of my work teaching at USC. So I just love working with the students. I love mentoring the students. And it just, I don't know how I thought of it. It just dawned on me one day that this is something I could actually make money at and do really well, you know, help people identify, you know, who they are as people. So when they go out to look for jobs, get promoted, you know, whatever they're doing, they are branded. They have a point of difference. They're not just, you know, looking, you know, they're standing out instead of blending in with everybody else in a very competitive world. So I started that roughly April last year. I've been doing it for, you know, about a year now.
Wonderful. And so when you help somebody, what is, so it seems to me like you have categories of people, like people, recent graduates that are trying to get hired. You have, you know, people looking, and maybe after children looking to get back into the workforce. You have also people that are, you know, as people live online lives, they start to have to create an online persona.
Yeah.
And so what do you do for, what advice or tips do you have for those people in those different categories?
Well, it's a big question. Let me just start out by saying that, I've worked with everyone from like C-level people, you know, chief marketing officers down to, graduating students, grad students and undergraduate students. And, you know, the one thing that unites it all, it's really not that different from, it's really no different from branding any kind of product or service, right? It's like a friend of mine just said, you know, you should tell your clients that you're a tube of toothpaste, you know, because it's the same thing. It's like, you know, there's some packaging on the outside that you see, right? But the good stuff's on the inside, and you have to kind of describe what that is, and you have to be different from all the other toothpaste out there if you really want to stand out. You know, it's really true. So, you know, and we can get into this in more depth, but, you know, the best advice I have for people is that they have to find that unique point of difference. And it's again, it's generally going to be emotionally driven. It's like you're not just a collection of your skills and accomplishments. In fact, if a resume just has your skills and accomplishments on it, it's a very flat piece of paper. It doesn't really say anything about you or who you are. So I like to talk, really get into depth, talking to the, my clients and finding out exactly who they are, and then having them lead with that, instead of just falling back on, well, I worked here for 5 years and I did this and I did that. So what is that kind of, you know, unique nugget? And I have a process to get at it, which involves defining kind of what you're all about or your values. So what you stand for, and that's not a differentiation. That's not a reason to choose you. It's what you stand for. And then we get into the differentiation. Then we can write up what I call a strategic or a creative brief. And then we can start getting into the execution. You know, you just mentioned building an online persona. That's a really important part of it.
You're listening to Money Talk on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back.
If you have trouble handling your anger, get help. If someone you love is hurting or scaring you, get help. There is a full-service domestic violence agency in Santa Barbara County, which offers emergency shelter, counseling, transitional housing, anger management, and teen outreach programs. Its name is Domestic Violence Solutions for Santa Barbara County. Call their 24-hour helpline at 964-5245. Domestic Violence Solutions for Santa Barbara County, putting an end to domestic violence.
Did you know that domestic violence sends more than 500 women and children to emergency shelters every year? There is a place where all family members affected by domestic violence can get help. Domestic Violence Solutions for Santa Barbara County, with four 24-hour phone lines to help. In Santa Barbara, call 964-5245. In Santa Maria, call 925-2160. In Lompoc, call 736-0965. And in Santa Ynez, call 686-4390.
When I grow up, I want to be a new pair of blue jeans.
When I grow up, I want to be a kid's first computer.
When I grow up, I want to be a glass countertop in a new home.
When I grow up, I want to be a kid's best birthday present.
When I grow up, I want to be a football stadium.
When I grow up, I want to be a warm fleece on a cold day.
When I grow up, I want to be a fancy backsplash.
I want to be a bike that races around the
country. When I grow up, I want to be a bench on a forest trail.
I want to be a rocking chair on
when
a sunny
I grow up,
porch.
I want to be a skyscraper.
I want to be a...
I want to be a...
I want to be
a...
I
want to
be
a...
I want to be
a... I want to be
a...
I want to
be
a...
When I grow up, I don't want to be a piece of garbage. And if you recycle me, I won't be.
Give your garbage another life. Recycle. Learn how at iwanttoberecycled.org. A public service advertisement brought to you by Keep America Beautiful and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Money Talk, brought to you by American Riviera Bank, making your life easier with cutting-edge technology, mobile deposits, free use of every ATM machine in the country, and a level of service other banks can only dream about.
So before the break, we were talking about, you know, how people actually differentiate themselves. And it sounds like it really has allowed you to bring together all the parts of what you love about, you know, branding and marketing by capturing that emotion, which is the essence, which actually makes people see you differently from other people. And so it doesn't sound like it's too dissimilar to what you did for, you know, marketing or ads by, you know, weaving in that emotional tie so that people can see you as a three-dimensional person, as opposed to just a flat piece of paper, like you said before.
I use the exact same process, whether it's, you know, for any brand, whether it's a person, a product, or a service, it's really the exact same thing. And it's really applied the same way as well. And it's a fascinating process. There's a lot to go into it. But, you know, I was just talking about values, for instance, right? So just understanding, like, what's important to you? What's your reason for being? Why do you exist in the world? So there's a a book that I teach and that I use in my business called Grow. It's by a guy named Jim Stengel, who is the former head of marketing at Procter & Gamble. And he writes about this. This thought has been around in marketing a long time, that you have to market to a brand ideal. You can't just market your features and benefits. You have to stand for something bigger. Okay. And we've been saying this in marketing for years. One of the exercises I like to do with my corporate clients anyway, is the first question I ask them. I say, what do you make? Okay. And you can't say I make computers or sports drinks or toothpaste or anything like that. You have to ladder up to something. So what does Starbucks make? They don't make coffee. They make community. I mean, that was kind of the founding principle. It wasn't the founding principle. It's what Howard Schultz did once he got into the company. Starbucks, as you may know, was just a local Seattle-based wholesale roaster of beans. They did not sell coffee by the cup. They had no retail locations. And it was Schultz's vision. Once he went to a trade show in Milan, Italy, and you know, talking about a New York kid, a Brooklyn kid out in Milan for the first time. And he discovered the Italian coffee house. And he said, wow, this is great. It's like where everybody comes. It's really the hub. And it's also, and I'm not sure if he coined this phrase or not, it's a third place. It's not home. It's not work. It's that third place where you go and congregate. So Starbucks is about community. And Gatorade isn't really about electrolytes. It's really about peak performance, right? It's really about aspiration. And Apple is about creativity. It's not about computing or phones per se. So it's really important to kind of figure out what you stand for and what fundamental human values kind of go along with that. So I'll give you a practical example of how this is used. In one of my classes, I was talking to the students about a qualitative research method. And I said, when I do these in-depth interviews, I always like to start with a really wide open question, open-ended question, like, tell me about yourself. And one of the students raised her hand really quick and said, professor, I changing the subject. She said, I had an interview yesterday and the interviewer asked me to tell me about myself. And I was like a deer in the headlights. I had no idea what to say. And it's interesting when you think about it, tell me about yourself. It's a really hard question to answer. Most people will start giving you facts, you know, well, I'm married, I have three kids, I live in California. You're not really telling me anything about yourself. You know, I really want to go deeper. So what I told her is if you understand who you are, if you understand your values and what you stand for, it's really easy to answer that question. And it's a great thing to fall back on in interviews. So if you ask me, you know, Jeff, tell me about yourself.
Jeff, tell us about yourself.
Well, let me tell you, I'm a really curious person. You know, I've always been fascinated with, you know, people and what makes them tick. And you know, I've been like this since I was a little kid. And, you know, I brought that passion and that curiosity into marketing, into business. And it's why I love what I do, because what I do is all about, you know, getting into the nuance and asking questions and digging deeper and deeper and deeper. So I really thrive on this. So if I were in an interview and I said that, now I can start telling stories that kind of fulfill, you know, this notion that I'm a really curious, explorative person, and kind of talk about how that is a huge benefit coming into the job. So, you know, I'm not saying, oh, I've worked in marketing for 20 years and I've done this and I've done that. You know, I start out with something that's really about me, and you know, is curiosity unique? You know, not particularly, but you know, it is really what drives me. And, you know, I can guarantee you that if you're in an interview, you know, that's the kind of thing people will remember. They're going to remember kind of what you're all about. They're going to kind of see how you frame things, you know, what perspective you have on things, how you approach things. So I think that's the value, you know, one of the great values of really understanding yourself and understanding your values. Because, you know, you can launch into all kinds of stories that really kind of illustrate why you're different from others.
You know, before we go to break, I just want to ask you about the value of branding, given so much of what we are buying today, whether it's at Costco or Walmart, are private brands that are usually made by the same company that has a brand. But has there been a significant reduction in the value of a brand because of so much private label stuff?
Absolutely, especially in packaged goods. And the center of the supermarket is now known as the graveyard. Okay, so you know, that's where all the packaged foods are, right? There's the, you know, the meat and the dairy and the produce, right? Those are kind of on the perimeter of the supermarket. The inside of your cans and boxes of stuff, right? And that has been hurting for quite a long time because, I mean, you know, you make a great point. I mean, why would I buy Ragu sauce? I buy Trader Giotto's, you know, Trader Joe's, whatever, right? It's really the same thing. It's cheaper. It's really just as good. And Trader Joe, by the way, is a brand. I mean, I don't have to be ashamed of serving Trader Joe stuff if people ever see the jar. I usually kind of take it out of the jar and say it's homemade. But
well, that's not true. If you're serving $2 chuck, that's not a good idea.
That's different. That's a whole different.
The decanter, they may or may not know.
we're talking wine and spirits. It's a whole different conversation. But it, you know, in terms of those packaged goods, it's absolutely true. Now, interesting. I don't know what's going to happen now, but during COVID, a lot of those brands came back. You know, that center of the supermarket stuff, a lot, you know, snack foods, you know, people were home eating themselves silly. I think the average weight gain is 15 pounds or something like that, which, by the way, I gained and lost. So, you know, I'm back in shape. But it really did kill those brands. We'll see if they sustain. I doubt it. I really doubt it. And, you know, that brings up the question of what do some of those brands do, you know, but, and that this applies to people as well. You know, where are you in your life cycle? Should you just kind of give it up and milk the brand? Should you, you know, develop other brands or should you try to revive it? It's an age old question that all the big companies are asking themselves.
You're listening to Money Talk on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back with our final segment.
For prospective homebuyers, one of the most important steps of the loan process is getting clear and honest information from someone who will speak plainly and truthfully about loan programs and options.
I'm Kelly Marsh, Vice President, California, of Cornerstone Home Lending, where our highly skilled and experienced team takes great pride in helping clients obtain home financing with honest, knowledgeable, fast, friendly, and efficient service. As a Santa Barbara native who has spent the past 20 years in the mortgage industry and has closed over 4,000 loans, I'd appreciate the opportunity to earn your business and invite you to visit thekellymarshteam.com or call my office at 805-563-1100 to learn more about how Cornerstone Home Lending can help you determine the best way to manage mortgage debt to achieve a more stable financial future.
Licensed by the Department of Business Oversight under the California Residential Mortgage Lending Act. California Residential Mortgage Lending Act license number 41DB072220. California Financial Lending Law license number 60DB072528. Loan originator NMLS number 245822. Not a commitment to loan. Equal housing opportunity.
When a bank is owned by the community and invests in the community, it answers to a different call. It's personal. It's driven by your needs, not ours. Welcome to American Riviera Bank, based right here in Santa Barbara with branches in Montecito and Goleta. Our customers know us for personal service every day, every way.
You can bank on us.
Bank on us.
Bank on us!
American Riviera Bank. Bank on better.
Here's good news. Now you can enjoy studio quality sound on your devices from the station that talks about Santa Barbara any time of the day or night and from just about any place on the planet. Just say, hey Alexa, play KZSB AM 1290 when you're at home or bookmark KZSBAM1290.com on your Apple or Android devices and you've got streaming studio quality sound anytime, any place from the Santa Barbara News Press radio station.
Welcome back to Money Talk, brought to you by Arlington Financial Advisors, a leading wealth management firm founded on providing thoughtful, objective, and comprehensive financial guidance for families and entities who are seeking long-term financial confidence.
So JBH personal branding is helping people not only with their jobs, but also in their dating life as well, and their dating profiles. So tell us a good story about one of your clients who you've helped find love, because, you know, that's something pretty amazing.
Well, I can't really do that, but that's kind of, it's just an initiative. It's all relatively new, but so a little personal information here. I got divorced in 2006 and I was single for quite a long time. I had lots of dates, girlfriends, et cetera. And now I'm engaged.
I'm congratulations.
Getting married in September to someone I met about 2 years ago, somebody named Angela, who I met about 2 years ago. She's the greatest. I met her on Bumble. And so I can come at this from, you know, different experiences. So I had the marketing experience. So I kind of, you know, understand what sets people apart. And I kind of had, you know, the school hard knocks too, kind of just being out there and finding out about, you know, what's out there and how people relate to each other. Really interesting process. I really hated it towards the end. You know, it was like a third job or a fourth job because I work a bunch of jobs already. It was really miserable, but interesting looking how people present themselves, right? This is a big part of personal branding, how people present themselves, right? So, you know, first of all, you know, the photos, you know, they're ridiculous sometimes, you know, they're just, they don't really show people as they really are. Now, I'm not saying to put bad photos up there. You shouldn't put bad photos. You should put good photos up there. But, you know, the men don't want to be shirtless at the beach. And you know, the women don't want too many travel photos, whatever. You have to kind of, and you want to be current. That's the big thing. So many people lie, right? Lying in marketing and branding is never a good strategy. It's never a good strategy because you're always going to disappoint somebody, right? So you want to present yourself visually, you know, as you are, for better or worse. And in terms of who you are, what really fascinated me was just the level of generic BS that people put out there. You know, you see this time and time again. I love, you know, I didn't read the men's profiles. I read the women's profiles. You know, I love long walks on the beach. I can change from my, you know, jeans to my little black dress in less than a minute. This is just generic stuff. It tells me nothing about you. You know, I want to know something specific. I want to know really who you are. You know, if long walks on the beach is the best that you have to offer to your potential life mate, you know, there's something really lacking here. So, you know, as again, in all branding, you know, we have to get down to, you know, what really does make you different.
So we have to go now, but I would just like to say that advice could be important to a really potential client of yours, if you can find him. Bill Gates is now going to be on Bumble. And he may need that. Thank you so much for being our guest. It was very informative, Jeff. Jeff Hirsch, founder and president of the Right Brain Studio. You've been listening to Money Talk on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll see you all next week. It's